This week on the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, the staff of Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies continues an in-depth discussion of the ASC industry's biggest annual event, ASCA 2018 in Boston, and their favorite moments, biggest takeaways, and funny stories. And as we do each week, provide an update on the latest news in the industry.
Welcome to the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, a weekly podcast for anyone interested in the freestanding ambulatory surgery industry. This week's episode is sponsored by Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, one of the nation's leading full-service ASC regulatory compliance consulting firms, and the Regulatory Compliance series of books for ASCs by John Gailey and published by Eden Group Development. Welcome to episode 17 of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey for April 23rd, 2018. We're recording from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and there are pre-recorded segments from the Heinz Convention Center in Boston, Massachusetts, and ASCA 2018. This is Sue Cronkite, Senior Nurse Consultant with Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies. I'm here with John Gailey, the owner of Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies and one of the nation's leading ASC industry experts in regulatory compliance, finance, and administration. John is also a deemed status surveyor with one of the major accrediting organizations and the author of over 10 books about the ASC industry. So our listeners might have noted that we are short one co-host today. John and I are actually on vacation here in Myrtle Beach, and we left Jenna back in Rochester because someone has to mind the shop.
And actually, I tried to mix in a little bit of the ocean sound, but I only brought the dynamic mic, so we can't pick up any background noises. So I'm sorry, listeners, you have to put up with the same old sound here. But trust me, Sue and I just got back from the beach. We spent some time down there with the kids, with the kiddies, the grandchildren there, and had some fun. So. This is going to be an interesting vacation, though, because midway through the week, I do have to head back up to Chicago for the Fresenius Kidney Care Clinical Leadership Conference, which is going to be at the McCormick Place Convention Center in Chicago. There, I'm going to be doing a presentation on converting from office-based surgery to ambulatory surgery. I am looking forward to seeing all of my friends on the vascular access side of Fresenius, but obviously it does cut into our time together here. Yeah. Sorry about that, Sue.
I'm looking forward to sitting on the beach and next to the pool with the grandkids. So
yeah, you're not going to be suffering, I know. So, Sue, what's up this week in the ASC news?
Well, if you attended ASCA 2018 last week in Boston, Massachusetts, just want to remind you to be sure to sign up for your continuing education online or through the ASCA Meetings app that you downloaded on site. To request your credits, you'll need your ID number that was located on the back of your attendee badge. Also, save the date for ASCA 2019 to be held May 15th through 18th, 2019 at the Gaylord Opryland Resort in Nashville, Tennessee. If you have a suggestion for a topic or speaker for ASCA's next annual meeting, please go to the ASCA website and follow the links to send in your suggestions. Data collection for the first quarter, Q1 of ASCA's 2018 Clinical and Operational Benchmarking Survey is now open. This valuable online resource allows you to compare your ASC's metrics with national performance statistics on clinical outcomes, staff indicators, billing performance, and more. If you haven't yet subscribed, purchase a 2018 subscription now.
And don't forget to go to the ASC Association website for that. So during ASCA 2018, I had a couple questions regarding OSHA. So I thought I would remind people of the OSHA 300 requirements. So in January 2015, OSHA updated the list of industries that are partially exempt from keeping the OSHA Form 300, the Form 300A, and the Form 301. ASCs, which are classified as outpatient care centers, are on that list and therefore are not required to keep or post the OSHA Form 300 and the associated Form 300A and Form 301. It is important to note, however, that if you are in a state that does require those forms be kept, that you will, of course, have to keep them. ASCs, of course, are still required to maintain records of injury and illness records, including a Sharps injury log. Therefore, we recommend that you keep track of these injuries either on the OSHA forms, which you're not required to keep, or a form of your own design. But again, remember to follow the state laws if they are more specific. Okay, that's it for the news. Let's take a short break and come back with the second part of our two-week summary of ASCA 2018. Okay, so this is John Gailey. I'm back here at ASCA 2018 with my colleagues at Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies. I have Judy D'Ambrosio, Director of Educational Services, Sue Cronkite, who is a Senior Nurse Consultant, Jenna Alvarez, a Nurse Consultant, and Alex Borneman, who is our Director of Operations. So don't mind the noise in the background. We're here at kind of at the end of the conference. It's the last session. We skipped out, guys. I know we probably shouldn't have, but we skipped out so that we could make sure that our listeners got a good view of what's going on here. So we've been talking a little bit. I'll tell you, the last 24 hours has probably been the most inspiring for me. I've enjoyed certainly talking to everybody. We've gotten some wonderful feedback about the podcast. I know, Judy, during one of your sessions earlier, somebody was talking about the podcast, and then you said a couple words, and they said, "Oh, my goodness, that's you.
Oh, I've met Judy." It's like...
So we're all stars.
Yeah,
maybe not rock stars, but we're stars, at least in our own minds. So let's talk a little bit first about what happened in the last 24 hours since we recorded the last episode, and anything that people have anything to say. I'll start with you, Judy, again.
I love it when you do that. I'm not sure if this is worthy. Can I tell you how fabulous the social event was?
Absolutely.
I'm mesmerizing. You know, the idea that they closed the Boston Public Library for us.
And we were able to talk.
Yeah,
in the
nobody
library.
Shushed us ever.
Yeah, and there was loud music in the library.
And I actually saw people take a book out and read it. I was like very impressed. But the venue was really breathtakingly beautiful. I had never seen the library before. Anyway, but they just went out of their way to make us really feel like celebrities. Like this was a red carpet event. Made me feel really special. It was just fabulous.
And it was really nice this year too, I thought. A number of people have talked about how often during these events it's very hard to hear talk because the music is permeating the whole place. And here we had the opportunity to not necessarily be with the music because I'm old and the music was young. And, you know, Sue and I had other things to do other than to dance there. So we had an opportunity to see a lot of, you know, talk to a lot of people and old friends, new friends, et cetera. It was a great opportunity. So absolutely, I agree with you.
There are so many sessions going on and you know you have friends here, but you just don't run into them in the hallway or you don't. It was just such a nice opportunity to walk around. And there were people enjoying that music room. Holy cow, that was a crowded dance floor. Let me tell you.
There were a lot more dancing going on than normal. Yeah.
People were really, really enjoying that. And it's nice every once in a while to have, you know, to be made to feel special, you know, like you're important in the work you've done all year. And this is how we're going to reward you for that. And awesome. I really liked how that felt.
Yeah. That's very nice. Like you said, there were probably 3-4 different rooms. So we were able to either listen to the music or go someplace and sit down in some comfy chairs and just talk and see everybody.
Especially those of us that are older and can't run around. So at one point, I noticed our two younger people putting on costumes and taking pictures.
You did the photo booth.
Because they had a lobster hat.
Okay, so where are the pictures?
And I couldn't get out of this.
Yeah, Jenna is very persuasive sometimes.
And we had it like, we had to wait in line for a while, so we had it planned out. We're doing the lobster first.
It was all themed.
Yeah, then there was a Fenway Park.
Yep. Which we avoided anything Boston, because I'm a Bills fan.
I snuck up on them. They did not see me. And I'm watching them, like, they take the pictures with one costume on and then drop to the floor, grab the next ones. And then I don't think it was more than 5 seconds before they were in the next costume. It was hilarious. And the people standing watching them go, thought, they are the cutest couple. And by the way, they're cousins.
Not. Yeah, you're going to have to show me those later.
Oh,
I think those. We probably they're should post actually, them.
Don't you think? Why have a website if it's if not going to be used for stuff like this?
With those pictures,
I
yes.
agree.
So we promise our audience that we will have those pictures posted shortly. So Judy, I asked you the question earlier. Just tell me a little bit about, you know, what did you see in the last 24 hours in the conference that you thought might be interesting for our listeners?
There were several sessions since the last time we spoke. And I sat in on near misses, learning from your mistakes. And that was yesterday afternoon. Let me tell you who the speaker was, because I really did enjoy her. Lori Heels. And although some of the stories were just mind-boggling to me that these things happen, but things happen. You know, and there were people in there that were sharing stories of their own, which was nice. And they've been in their center for 25 years.
Yeah.
And something happened that never once happened before, or never ever occurred to them. Because that's how a mistake happens. You know, it is something that you hadn't thought of. And no matter how many different things you put in place to stop that from happening, sometimes they just happen. Yeah. You know, and she stressed a lot of the non-punitive, let's just fix this, you know, and we'll worry about it at the end. But I thought she was a great speaker. I really enjoyed that one. I think you were in there with me,
yes,
Sue.
Yes, I liked it. Very good.
And then this morning, Jenna and I sat through patient selection, which isn't usually something that we're involved in, so I found that really fascinating. Mm-hmm. Also a wonderful speaker. And now I got to look at you. Missy Solis, she's from the Mississippi Valley Health Center. A young lady, but a really good speaker, really kept everybody engaged. She admitted that she was a little nervous in front of a room of that size and had gone through her material so quickly that she had a lot of room, a lot of time at the end. But I found, although her messaging was really good, I learned a lot from the people that stood up and said, okay, I have this problem, who sets their limit at such and such a BMI, or
who takes isolation,
who takes MRSA patients.
Yeah.
And I learned so much from those people that were just willing to stand up and say, okay, I have this, an opportunity, not a problem, an opportunity for me to work on. What are your suggestions? And people were just so willing to share, oh, we do this, and have you thought about doing this? And
I think that's one of my favorite things about these conferences as well, is the discussions that get started, the sharing of knowledge that
willingly
sharing. An expert up there, but you have a million people in the room who all have been in this industry and all have their stories and all have what works for them. And, you know, maybe someone else is struggling with that exact thing at their center.
Yeah, I agree, Jenna. Sometimes those are the best parts of the sessions, is when people get to talk about, this is what I do, or can somebody give me advice on that? Because that's a brave thing to do.
Yeah.
I'm asking for help because I don't know how to get to the end of this. And people are just so magnanimous and willing to help you. I just love that.
Yeah, as a speaker, I've always felt that one of the best part, as everybody knows, I tend to go over in my sessions. But one of the reasons I go over is I'm always asking for feedback from the audience as to what they're interested in. So I'm much more, if I have to change things in the presentation, I know what is more relevant to them. A couple times during this conference, I've actually been running way behind, and I kept asking the audience, you know, are we talking about those things that you want to talk about? And universally, they pretty much said that. So I agree with you that's probably, I'm kind of learning. I'm wondering what it would be like if we were to actually do a presentation where there's 15 minutes of presentation and then leave the rest of it for open, or maybe even just walk in with experts in certain fields and say, this is a total question answer period.
Oh, that would be so great.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
Actually, it would be a great thing for a podcast, for that matter, if we can get a live audience.
And they did do something like that where they had, I think on Wednesday, they had the Ask the Experts, where it was a small panel.
Right.
I think they had four leaders in the industry, and they had groups of nine come through and have discussions, Q&A.
I think actually Lori involved in that?
She moderated.
She may have been, yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a good idea, and if they could do that on a larger scale.
And break them up into sessions, like this is question and answer for policy writing, or this is question and answer for life safety, and have a couple experts in there and just spend the whole hour and 15 minutes getting to know the people around you, seeing what they struggle with, and letting the experts steer you in the right direction. I think that would be so great.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Jenna, since you've already talked a little bit, why don't you talk a little bit about the last 24 hours and what you took out of some of those sessions?
Well, I, like Judy, enjoyed that patient selection session. I went to an interesting one just because I don't normally deal that much with this, and my role is it was about the DEA and the EPA and drug disposal, and it was just kind of fascinating. It sounds like there's some new legislation that is on the horizon that actually sounds like if they pass the part that we want them to pass will be beneficial in that it's going to take away some regulations that were passed back in the 80s that are not necessarily relevant or
today. Yeah.
And they really take a lot of those regulations are based on manufacturers, and they're actually the proposed policy is going to actually make a separate area for healthcare that'll help us have regulations that are more appropriate to our industry. Hopefully, if they get passed, it sounded from the presentation like if they pass this regulation, there might be some benefits for our industry.
Alex, unfortunately, you tend to go to the more technical sessions.
Yes.
That's kind of your job there. So enlighten us with some of the more technical details. Did you go to more for life safety?
There was another life safety one. This one was focused entirely on NFPA 99, which does have some newer material since the 2012 codes were adopted in 2016. We now have this NFPA 99 risk assessment that we all need to do. And during the session, one of the things that was stressed a lot is the importance of this risk assessment and basically what it means for the center. And so the risk assessment, so it covers everything from medical gas to electrical systems, and really the risk assessment ends up determining which of the codes actually applies to your center. So if, you know, you determine that a certain system will have an adverse patient outcome if it fails, that system will be more critical and you'll have credit codes that are applying to your center.
Did they provide you with any tools, or is there anything that's out there yet that we can share with our audience? I know we're gonna have to talk about this in an in-depth session sometime in the future, but anything we can quickly give people so that at least they can start off on this NFPA 99 risk assessment?
Yep, we have the risk assessment available, and we can make that available to our listeners as well. I know we got that. That's a standard form. I believe it's ASHE, A-S-H-E, the American Health. Probably should have thought about the... I don't know. Okay. The engineers. Those engineer people. But
any other sessions that you found were interesting that you attended?
Well, I attended a few again that, you know, I'm not usually involved with. Some of those were about OSHA safety. There was also one about the policy manual, which I believe is a similar one to what I attended in Las Vegas back at the ASCA Winters seminar. But that had a lot of useful information as well, talking about downtime procedures. When the EMR is down, what do we do? We need a policy for that.
Yeah, I heard that, I'm going to say, in three different sessions while I was here. And it's a policy that we don't have for a lot of our clients is in our emergency preparedness. Well, what do you do if your computer system gets, you know, goes down and you need to have that paper trail because you need to re-input it when the system comes up. And then you need to train all of your employees on how to use that system.
I think what we do have tends to be computer system goes down, you go back to paper, you scan the paper in or you enter the data later. But there's actually much more to that, because one of the systems goes down, it's just not your EMR. It's not just that registration information that's just not available.
You know, it's everything.
It's kind of funny, but as our industry changes and our new nursing population comes in, I don't think I've ever really used a paper chart.
Really?
In a hospital.
Oh, you are young. we had down in the hospital that I worked at years ago, there's a cold downtown procedure, and it was part of our mandatory education on how to do that. Now, granted, and maybe in a larger system, there's more... not opportunity, risk of having your system crash. And in some of our smaller, it may not be as big a risk.
I know the one hospital I worked at, they had they still had their old paper chart that they would use during downtime. And because there were so many nurses that had used them in the past, it was no problem for them to go back to that. But the other hospital system that I worked at, they had downtime papers that would print out when our EMR went down. And if they went down, not many nurses really knew how to fill out that paperwork, and they'd end up, the computer went back up. At the end of the shift, they're going to just chart.
Put everything in.
In the computer the way they normally do. And that's not always a realistic thing. So
Yeah, I found it funny that I just heard that from so many different sessions on completely different things. So that is
but
really
as the
something.
EMR comes more into our centers.
More universal,
That's going to be definitely.
That's a good question. Actually, maybe we'll end with that a question about that, like what we universally saw. But we still have Sue tell us about now. This again is Sue's first event. She, by the way, Sue isn't actually even full time yet with us, and yet she
still gave up 4 days of her life.
I know to come
hang out
here,
with us crazy people.
So Sue, tell us what you saw within the last 24 hours.
Well, it's been fun. I've learned a lot. So a couple of the sessions that I attended over the past couple days. On anesthesia's role in infection control, Dr. Arnaldo Valadon.
Yep.
And that seems to be something I've heard throughout this is that, unfortunately, anesthesiologists are a particular challenge. and he said so himself, you know, just things like hand washing, things like that. Just, I don't know, you know, they get busy or whatever. And he had a lot of good tips, policies, you know, just double gloving when they intubate a patient, taking off the first set of gloves and, you know, to do everything else as they're touching the things and adjusting everything that kind of reduces the spread of infectious things. And, you know, so I just found that pretty interesting. It was a helpful one. And then develop an education and competency program for endoscope reprocessors with Laura Schneider. That was great. She gave a lot of resources and links to different policies and how to come up with you know good guidelines and just keep up to date on all the changes and because as we know there's been some issues lately with some of the duodenoscopes.
We're getting better
I'm starting about to get that word.
Practicing a bit.
Yeah. Yep. Really, one of the more inspiring sessions really was John's preparing for a survey. I just you know he. John, you love to teach, and
I
just, but everybody really enjoyed it, and there was so much, you know, the one session, I think we were there for, an hour and 15 minutes afterwards, just with everybody coming up and having questions, and, I mean, the people that were asking the questions, they were just, it was so important to them to just do the best job they could, not just preparing for the survey, but to just really make their centers as efficient and as good for the patient as they can. And I, you know, it just really made me realize how people that are in this industry, you know, how important it is to them to get the information they need to do the best job they can. So I actually, that was kind of energizing. It was a good session.
I got to say that I was just so enthused myself afterwards because when you listen to these people coming up, asking these questions, not being afraid to kind of admit that, you know, they really want to learn a lot more, it made me, you know, proud to be in this industry and want to do so much. And remember the one woman that we're talking to, she just kept apologizing for asking all these questions. And I'm thinking, you know, this is how I learn. I'm, you know, that was me 29 years ago coming here. I didn't know anything. I still feel like I don't know I certainly don't know everything. And there's so much more to learn. And that's our duty. You know, those of us that know, you know, much more, you know, about the industry now that we've been around to teach the newer generations coming up. And that's what we do as a business. We help each other out. We steal policies from each other. In other words, we share them with each other. We share forms. We share knowledge. This is not a business where people, you know, hide that information.
It has been. I think it's been a really overriding theme is that everybody's so willing to help each other and share their information and their issues and everything.
So let's take a short break, and then we'll come back with another question, and we'll be right back. So we're back here in Boston at the Heinz Convention Center. They're wrapping everything up. As a matter of fact, they're probably about to take all of the tables out of this room that we're using right now. So any background noise we have, I'm sorry about that. So I wanted to ask one last question before we hop in the cars and head home. And that is, what inspired you the most in this conference? And we kind of talked about it in a previous segment here. And my view is just the enthusiasm of the people here, helping to understand that we are so different than what we're portrayed in the outside world. Remember that article or that news article from USA Today that talked about how, you know, surgery centers, all they care about is the bottom line. That is not my impression here at all in speaking to these people.
Not at all.
So again, we'll start with you, Judy. What inspired you here?
Well, going back to something that Sue had said earlier, these people are here because they want to do the very best job for their patients. And you had mentioned yesterday while we were recording the podcast, the earlier session, and you had said that we had like 400 unplanned walk-ins. And this is not an inexpensive, you know, it isn't. It isn't an inexpensive thing. So the idea that people sacrifice their time, sacrifice whatever they need to financially to be
and
here.
Part of the weekend.
And part of the, you're right. It's today's Saturday, isn't it? So yeah, okay. And part of their weekend. And then to come and be so incredibly enthusiastic and ask questions and share knowledge and make new friends and all the knowledge you can gain from that. I mean, I was inspired by, this is so important to these people. And whoever that writer was, you know, for USA Today and Kaiser, apparently had no idea what an ASC really is. Absolutely. Or how they operate or the caliber of the people that work there. So I was inspired to see just the dedication, you know, and the willingness to help one another. It was awe-inspiring, actually.
Let's go to Alex next. What was inspiring to you?
Sure. As you know, I enjoy all things that are dry and...
and tactical and boring.
Tactical and boring. Yep. One of the most inspiring things to me was that none of the fire safety sessions were empty. They were all jammed packed. And the fact that, I guess, throughout the week and the weekend, I sat through probably about 10 hours of life safety, and all of them were next to filled with people. So if that says something about how much the people care in this industry.
On something that's a relatively dry topic.
You're right. Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well said. Jenna.
I think I was inspired by all of the people with excitement about infection control and the new CAPE certification, trying to learn more information about what they can do to improve their center. Even though we're already in an industry where there's very few infections, statistically, there's always everyone's striving to be better than good, than great.
Better than acceptable. I mean, it was both disappointing and encouraging that in every single infection control, we had people sitting on the floor, backs against the wall, two people deep. I mean, these were jam-packed infection control sessions.
I think I heard the story that, Jenna, you went to the restroom, came back, and your seat was gone, and you couldn't even...
Poor thing, yeah. That'll teach you.
They did move it to another room the next day to accommodate.
No, they did. No, I didn't mean that from a venue point of view. Yeah, I did that from an interest.
There's so much interest in it, and people were willing to sit on the ground to get the knowledge.
Yeah.
I'll speak a little bit on behalf of ASC Association. We knew that it was going to be popular. We did not know how popular it was going to be, and we've actually been overwhelmed even on behalf of CAPE and the Basque board right now as to how much enthusiasm and excitement there is for the CAPE credentials. So, and I'm glad, I know quite a number of you went through a lot of those infection control, the two nurses at the table, Sue and Jenna in particular, but I know, Judy, you were attending as many of them on the policy side and the education side, so good. Sue.
Okay. I think a lot of what I've already said, and just hearing, I think it was the first session where the gentleman came out and was talking about his experience with hospital-based situation and then needing some surgery and going through the outpatient surgery center, and just what a great experience it was for him, you know, just the individualized care. And, you know, it isn't about, you know, people making money or saving money. I mean, I don't know if I'm saying this right, but I feel like, you know, coming from where I did with pediatrics and then nurse family partnership, more of a human services kind of thing, I wasn't sure, but just meeting everybody here, everybody is really so warm and just really, really dedicated. Mm-hmm. Not so much, I mean, obviously everybody has to make a living and pay their bills, but I didn't get that overriding feeling. It was really more just really wanting to do everything they could to keep their patients safe, really sticklers for the infection control, and just, you know, really proud of the job that they can do to make people's experience better than it would be in the hospital.
Yeah, in last week's episode, I spoke briefly about how as an industry, I really feel that we need to start thinking about, instead of surgery centers being an alternative to a hospital, that now we are an industry on our own. We don't have to say that anymore, that indeed we as surgery centers are the choice. We should be the choice for outpatient surgery. And we should start hearing that hospitals are the alternative to surgery centers. And we need to change that dialogue and help people to start understanding that we don't have to be apologetic anymore. You know, we're not, you know, the secondary option here. And we're a business on our own. And I think we're mature enough. We've been mature like this for a long time. This conference probably helped me to understand better than anybody else. I got to tell you, I enjoyed being with all of you here. This is the first time we've been able to put all of our employees, all six of us together. Lori volunteered to moderate all of the remaining sessions for the show. So she's not with us right now, but it has been a joy to have everybody together and to be able to talk things through. So, and one of the other things that happened, I don't know, I know a number of you spoke to our listeners. And if you have any stories about that, I'd love to hear it. But one listener came up to me and said, how do we get, you know, how do you choose your content? And I
was there. I remember.
Yeah. And I told the story that, you know, usually we just look around what's happened during the last week in the company, and whatever was the big topic of the week, we turn into the content area. And she says, well, is there any way that we can give suggestions? And I guess because we put that comment at the end of the session, people don't hear that. So we're going to make sure that we repeat it throughout. We would love, absolutely love to hear from you, because we want to make this show relevant to everybody. So please send your comments to comments@ascpodcast.com. That's comments@ascpodcast.com. Call me on the phone, 585-594-1167. Send me an email, you know, through the website, whatever you need to do. All of us here are really looking forward to expanding this this podcast, making it more relevant to everybody. I certainly heard a lot of great things. Did anybody else get comments that you know, some suggestions?
Just comments of people, you know, recognizing us, or, you know, making comments about the podcast and wanting to hand out the cards to their friends. And yeah, a lot of good feedback.
We went through over 500 cards, by the way.
Yeah.
I looked, I don't know where they all went, but we handed out a lot of podcast cards. So we expect our listenership too, from the numbers, have jumped pretty dramatically this week. It's about 100% over what it was the previous week. So I know people are jumping on board. So I'm very excited about that. And again, thank you all. So I know, Jenna, we got to check out soon because somebody forgot to do the late checkout. Is that what happened?
Oh, no comments. No comment.
Okay. Take it easy. We'll see you next week.
And you have a special offer for our listeners this week.
Yes, indeed we do. So as a special offer for all of our listeners on this podcast, we're offering a significant discount on my book, The Survey Guide for ASCs, a guide to the CMS conditions for coverage and interpretive guidelines for ambulatory surgery centers. This book, as hopefully everyone knows by now, is the leading book in the industry for preparing for a CMS survey. Has a lot of information about what the regulations are, the interpretive guidelines, and really has a nice index to be able to find this information quickly. I find it's particularly helpful for those difficult questions we sometimes get from the physicians when they say, okay, show me the regulation. And they can pull this book out and go right to that section very quickly. So in order to take advantage of this deal, go to the ascpodcast.com website, which is ascpodcast.com. And follow the link for this week's episode. You will see a link to purchase the book.
And how long is this offer available?
You can purchase this book at this discount through April 30th.
Thanks, John. So please head over to our website, ascpodcast.com, to take advantage of this great offer.
So let's talk about some upcoming events in the ASC industry. Every week we will inform you of upcoming events. If you would like your event to be included in the podcast, please send the event information to info at
ASCpodcast.com. And note that we also have a calendar of events on our website at www.ascpodcast.com. It's still under construction, and information is being added pretty regularly now.
The New York State Association of ASCs has its spring conference coming up at the Desmond in Albany, New York, May 17th and 18th. And the New Jersey Association of ASCs has the 8th Annual Ambulatory Surgery Conference on June 12th and 13th at the Wilshire Grand Hotel.
Becker's 16th Annual Future of Spine and the Spine, Orthopedic, and Pain Management-Driven ASC Conference is June 14th through 16th, 2018 at Swiss Hotel, Chicago, Illinois. Registration for the online CAPE exam that will be administered during the month of October at various testing centers throughout the United States is August 1st through 31st, 2018. To register, go to www.aboutcape.org. That's www.aboutcape.org.
The California Ambulatory Surgery Association has the CASA Annual Conference, September 5th through the 7th, 2018, in Huntington Beach. The Ohio State Association meeting will be September 18th through the 20th at the Hilton Polaris in Columbus, Ohio.
The CASA Infection Prevention Seminar, November 7th and 8th, 2018, in Costa Mesa, California. Registration for the online CASC exam that will be administered during the month of August at various testing centers throughout the United States is May 1st through 31st, 2018. To register, go to www.aboutcasc.org. That's www.aboutcasc.org. Another testing period is in October 2018, and registration for that exam will be August 1st through the 31st.
If you'd like to have your event listed on the website and discussed on the air, please email us at info@ascpodcast.com. Well, that's it for this week's podcast. Sue and I are heading for the beach. Jenna is heading back to work, and we'll be back again next week for another episode of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey. Make sure you take advantage of the special deal on my survey guide book for a discounted rate. Please visit www.ascpodcast.com. And please spread the word about our podcast with your friends and colleagues, and do us the honor of hitting the subscribe button. If you'd like to make a suggestion for an upcoming podcast, please send us an email at comments@ascpodcast.com. See you next week.
This podcast is an educational and operational tool and is not intended to be a comprehensive resource for all the rules, regulations, and standards that an ambulatory surgery center must meet. The advice provided should not be considered as, nor does it constitute, legal advice or opinion. When reviewing specific situations involving legal and regulatory issues, attorneys and other professionals should be consulted. This has been a production of Eden Group Development, all rights reserved. We would like to thank this week's sponsors, Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, one of the nation's leading regulatory compliance and financial oversight firms. For free consultation, contact John Gailey today at 585-594-1167 or through email at info@ah-strategies.com. Our other sponsor today is Eden Group Development, which publishes ASC Regulatory Compliance Series, the ASC industry's leading books, including The Survey Guide for ASCs, a guide to the CMS conditions for coverage, and interpretive guidelines for ambulatory surgery centers, and Ambulatory Surgery Center Governance, a guide for ambulatory surgery center owners and governing body members. These must-have books are available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble or directly from the publisher at reg-books.com. That's reg-books.com. If you are interested in advertising or sponsoring the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, please email us at info@ascpodcast.com. We would love to hear your questions and comments. Please email us at comments@ascpodcast.com.